Grab your lunch, turn up the volume, and get ready for 3 hours of sports conversation surrounding the hottest sports topics and pop culture events of the day. It's the new Sports 180. To be a part of today's show and share your thoughts, call in to 656-9900, 656-9900, or via Twitter using @Sports180. Now, with Heather Harrington, here is Josh Ward.
Good Thursday afternoon. Welcome into Sports 180. We appreciate you being with us on today's show as we are here for the next 3 hours with a lot to talk about. We have one major sports league announcing its return date, and it will take place in less than a month. We'll tell you about that coming up. We're going to talk some Tennessee football today on the field, coaching rankings. It's Jeremy Pruitt's birthday. We'll have a note on that looking back at his first 2 years on the field at Tennessee. And excited for today's guests who will stop by the show as well. Our Call of All segment today at 12:30 will feature Jonathan Wade, the former Tennessee defensive back, spent several years in the NFL and played on that 2006 team that had a huge win against Georgia. You'll hear that game, the Vol Network call on Saturday. You'll hear Jay Wade coming up at 12:30. John Wilkerson will stop by from 1:30 until 2. And then Alan Bell of Sportsline.com will join us to talk some NFL coming up at 2:30. Heather Harrington, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, doing great, guys. And just looking forward to the brighter days. I mean, all this little sports news that we're getting coming out with the NHL earlier this week. I mean, it's just exactly what we need to hear at this point in time. It's very hopeful. There are like firm plans in place, and I'm here for it. I need some sports in my life.
Yes, looking forward to it. Sports returning, something I think we all agree on wanting. Sports coming back. So we'll update you there as we take a look around the sports world.
The biggest news, the main stories, the headlines that have everyone talking. It's time to take a look around the sports world.
Heather, the English Premier League is coming back June 17th. Reports came out earlier this morning that that's going to happen. So the EPL is coming back June 17th with a couple of matches set. That is a Wednesday. So in the middle of the week, that's 3 weeks from yesterday, we will have English Premier League soccer. So 20 days, the countdown is on.
All right, I'm super excited because this also usually takes place in the middle of the day here for us. So I'm into trying new stuff. I'm trying this whole macro counting thing. So give me some EPL. You'll have to educate me a little bit. We'll call Himmel and see how excited he is. I know Will West will be pumped. So, yeah, bring it on. I'm here for the EPL if they come back.
Yeah, look out for Everton to make a charge.
That's your team, right?
Yeah, look out for me to be wrong as well. So that's exciting. We'll see how things play out with Major League Baseball. As word came out last night that the Major League Baseball Players Association plans to send a proposal with economic terms to Major League Baseball by the end of the week. And if you checked out Max Scherzer's Twitter account, he gave you an idea of what they were planning. That is to essentially ignore the proposal that was given to them by the owners. They do not plan to make any salary concessions. They want more games, in fact, to be played. So their proposal will include more games than what the owners were thinking, and also the prorated portion of salaries that they agreed to a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and they want to stick with that prorated amount. And I know that I just feel like if you're going to play a certain amount of games, why not get that percentage of your contract? It does seem like the easiest thing for me to be agreed upon, but I get it from the owner's perspective too. They're taking some massive losses that they didn't anticipate. This feels kind of like the Jadeveon Clowney NFL free agency, where one party is asking for one amount, interested teams are asking for another amount, and those two amounts are very far off. I mean, like, I just feel like the owners and the players, the divide is growing during this negotiation period and not getting any smaller.
We'll talk more about that, but yeah, it doesn't even appear that the players are looking at it as a negotiation. If their plan is to just ignore the proposal that was offered up, but that was the word from Jeff Passan last night, and Max Scherzer's words that he wrote would back that up, that on multiple phone calls yesterday, players essentially pledged to ignore the league's proposal and instead offer one of their own, which they will put together by tomorrow to give to the owners, and then I would say that's going to be a pretty critical one, because if the owners come back and say absolutely not, I don't know where they go from here. So we'll monitor that. The NBA continues to work and try to figure out what they're going to do. Would they go with a play-in tournament for the postseason? Would they go group stage like the World Cup for the first round of the playoffs, while still expanding the number of teams that are there? That's something that they are trying to get worked out. And then also eyeing a plan for players' families to be with them in Orlando, as Vegas does not appear to be any kind of position they're looking toward. They're looking at Orlando to try to resume the NBA season.
And what makes sense, Ramona Shelburne pointed out on Mina Kimes' podcast earlier this week, Bob Iger, who owns a lot of the rights, the television rights to the NBA, also is in charge of a little thing in Orlando, like the Disney complex, where they're thinking of playing this. And I think players have really warmed to the idea being on, I think they said it's a 22,000, I don't know, something about 22,000 maybe acre resort, where there's going to be multiple restaurants for the players to dine at, obviously multiple facilities for them to play at, five-star accommodations, they can play golf. So it looks like Bob Iger, who's really close friends with Chris Paul, also a mentor to Adam Silver, has worked out a nice deal to have Disney involved, especially as they're broadcast partners with ABC. So it does make sense, and it looks like Vegas has fallen by the wayside. But I think players are really digging this campus idea. But I don't know how many of the top teams are going to be sold on the sort of gimmicky World Cup play-in round while you're finalizing your playoff bracket. It'll be interesting to see who's on board with that and who's not.
Something that'll be interesting to monitor maybe over the next couple of days is JT Daniels, the quarterback transfer from USC. There is a lot of buzz right now that he could be headed to Georgia. Dogs247.com reported he's leaning Georgia and could make that an announcement in the next 24 to 48 hours. Daniels' name, at least, had been linked to Tennessee. Of course, Georgia has Jamie Newman on campus as a transfer. Daniels would need a waiver to be able to play right away. We also don't know exactly what his health situation is. Remember, he tore his ACL last September. Mm-hmm. Would he be ready to go right away at the start of the season? I don't know, but Daniels, a highly touted five-star quarterback who is on the move, could be headed to Georgia.
It's just very odd to me that they would even want him at this point in time, not knowing, you know, especially like you said, his health, if he would even be available for this upcoming season. Is this something that Kirby Smart is banking on for the long run, and maybe playing multiple years down the road? I don't really know, because all we've heard all offseason long, even though it's been a weird offseason, is just about how great Jamie Newman is. He could be one of the biggest impact players as a graduate transfer. And, you know, he's already getting ranked in the upper echelon of SEC quarterbacks. So I'm just curious. This just seems a little odd to me for JT Daniels to also be in the conversation now for Georgia.
Well, to me, the bigger question would be his interest in Georgia. I don't have much confusion why Georgia wants him. Georgia wants him because he's really talented.
Yeah, but for what? They're like long-term plans? I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I would think they would look at it and say next year he could be their starting quarterback. If he's on campus this fall, I mean, he may not be eligible, but you could practice with the team for a year and then be the starter in 2021, because Jamie Newman only has 1 year left.
Yeah, Jamie Newman's only there for the short term. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it makes sense for what they're doing and the groundwork that they're laying for this season and the upcoming season. But yeah, I don't know. But if he's planning on transferring and not getting the waiver anyway, maybe that's why he would consider Georgia.
We'll see there. And, of course, Georgia, one of the top programs in the country. That would be a reason to consider going to play for the Bulldogs. If Todd Monken's going to be there long-term, meaning the next at least 2 to 3 years as the OC, I'm sure that's part of the recruiting pitch as well. Speaking of recruiting, recruiting's fun, right, Heather? You love it when it comes up in conversation. So last night, Tennessee wide receiver Julian Nixon, Tennessee wide receiver commit Julian Nixon tweeted this: "I'm just putting this out there. Just because we committed don't mean stop recruiting us. We want to have relationships that we can trust, but there seems to be a misunderstanding. Get it together." And then tweeted, "Everything is fine." And then tweeted, "I'm committed. I'm not going nowhere." So you had that. He also, you know, there's a lot of interaction. People start to see the tweets. So with one of the replies to somebody who was tweeting to him, he said that He just needed some reassurance. He says, I'm committed. I just needed some reassurance. A reminder, we have a long way to go with recruiting for 2021.
So we've already had some Terrence Lewis drama earlier this week with him changing his bio and taking off the part of Tennessee commit. Now you've got Julian Nixon. This is exactly why I tend to not follow recruiting until it gets down to crunch time, which would be like late October, early November now with the early signing period. So, yeah, maybe I should just put my recruiting excitement that I've enjoyed over the past couple of months on the back burner. And, like, I'm talking the back burner. Holler at me in September with where Tennessee's at recruiting-wise.
Yeah, Terrence Lewis last night, by the way, tweeted out, what's y'all's dream school? Mine is Oregon.
Oh,
Sean Rucker
gosh.
Said Florida. So Twitter's awesome. Twitter recruiting during the quarantine. Sign me up for the madness. Let's buckle up and ride.
Wow.
That is a look around the sports world online and off of it as we begin each and every show. And one other note, we'll talk more about it. Be curious to get Alan Bell's perspective, but Jadeveon Clowney reportedly has an offer from the Cleveland Browns that is the most money he's received to this point. And Schefter noted during an interview talking to ESPN Cleveland, if Clowney wanted to be there, he'd be there. He's not yet. What does that say, and where does he want to go? It's a big question, but we'll talk more about that this afternoon. The Browns have reportedly offered Jadeveon Clowney the most money. To this point, he has not accepted it. That's a look around the sports world to begin Sports 180. We're going to have some fun this afternoon. Looking forward to talking to VFL Jonathan Wade, former Tennessee defensive back, coming up at 12:30. He was a part of that 2016 that we'll talk about. He was also in that 2004 Florida game and played a big role. Have to ask him about that. The old slap back and forth with Dallas Baker. One got caught, and it was the one that Tennessee wanted to get caught in that situation. Set up a memorable finish in that game. We'll have some fun this afternoon on Sports 180. We're going to talk about some coaching rankings, some interesting placement with the coaching rankings with Jeremy Pruitt and a couple of names you'll for sure recognize. That's coming up right here on Sports 180 with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. Sam Foreman's producing for us today on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
No hot takes or overreaction here.
We can't have anyone freak out there, okay? Gotta keep our composure.
Back to Sports 180 with Josh and Heather.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. Hope you're having a great Thursday as we continue on with a lot to cover on this afternoon's show. Jonathan Wade scheduled to join us for our Call of All segment at 12:30. And yesterday, Heather, we talked to Braden Gall of Athlon Sports. This will be a subject to bring up next week when he joins the show, as Athlon Sports has its preview magazine out, and we've talked about the Tennessee prediction, the Vols go 8-4, which is, I think, going to be a fairly common prediction for this upcoming year. That's what Athlon has for Tennessee. Braden Gall tweeted out some of the coach rankings that are being released from Athlon as they rank all the coaches in the country, starting at one on down. And he noted that there was kind of a, depending on how you look at it, funny bunch there in the mid-30s. So Jeremy Pruitt last year ranked 86th. He has jumped up from 86th to 39th. Some fans are probably going to say 39 is too low. Part of the point there would be, okay, well, let's see you prove a little bit more in the SEC. But more important than that for this discussion, I would say, is who is just ahead of Jeremy Pruitt when you look at the overall rankings. Number 33 is Lane Kiffin, who is, of course, a former Tennessee coach. He's one spot ahead of Jeremy Pruitt, I believe, in the SEC rankings. But if you look at the national rankings, Lane Kiffin comes in at number 33. Greg Schiano comes in at number 38. Jeremy Pruitt is number 39. If I recall correctly, I think there was some kind of tie-in with Tennessee and Schiano.
I think something about that. What category do we put Schiano in regards to Tennessee lore, and like, where does he fit? Because he was sort of hired, but not really. Like, can we say he was the coach at Tennessee, or he was just a target that they were going after? I mean, I don't know what label to put on Greg Schiano, but I do think it's hilarious that Braden pointed that out yesterday, and I was just shaking my head like, oh my gosh. Kind of piggybacking on the conversation that you guys had last week about turning a piece of Tennessee history into like a one of the documentaries like that you've seen with Michael Jordan or whatever's going on right now. And I think that got a lot of buzz too around Greg Schiano from Lane Kiffin all the way to Jeremy Pruitt.
Yep. So Lane Kiffin, number 33, Greg Schiano, number 38, Jeremy Pruitt, number 39. Also with SEC rankings, Braden tweeted this out. Number 8 in the SEC is Mike Leach. Number 9 is Lane Kiffin. Number 10 is Jeremy Pruitt. I think there's also a Tennessee Mike Leach connection. Just still trying to toggle my brain to think back over the last couple of years. What do you think there? Because I know where Tennessee fans are going to fall in. A lot of this conversation can come back to, okay, well, which coach do you want? You can do the resume conversation. You can do what have you done lately conversation. And then you can just go with the, well, okay, if both are available, who would you hire? Do you ask John Curry or do you ask Philip Fulmer? Do you ask Tennessee fans or do you ask Rutgers fans? That could be an interesting conversation as well. But Schiano's resume is more impressive. But that's largely because, at least at this point, because Jeremy Pruitt's only been a coach for 2 years. If you want to go with, I mean, Jeremy Pruitt has more opportunity because he's the coach at Tennessee while Schiano, again, is back at Rutgers.
Yeah, can I just, I don't want to sound like a brown noser or I'm drinking the Kool-Aid or anything like that. I just like things how they are right now. I really do. At this point in time, there's, you know, I feel like the seeds of doubt were sown a little bit, losing the games that he lost early on last season, Jeremy Pruitt. But I feel like those have shriveled up and died. Like if they even sprouted, we just sprayed Roundup on them and we have killed those seeds from flourishing with the way Tennessee was able to finish the season last year, going on the run, winning the bowl game, and then what they've done in recruiting. So I just think, hey, that's cool where the rankings are right now. I'll take Jeremy Pruitt at 39, a top 40 coach going into the season. And I want to compare it to what Athlon's going to say after the season, because I'm very hopeful that the narrative truly is changing in regards to Jeremy Pruitt being, I think he can climb up to a top 30 coach this year and then top 25, we'll see where it goes. But I definitely think that there's another climb in Jeremy Pruitt and this staff this season.
Well, you hope so. If Jeremy Pruitt is ranked outside the top 30 after this upcoming year, then it probably wasn't what Tennessee hoped it to be on the field this fall.
Do you think it would be the 8-4 season? I mean, I think he could be right outside the top 30 with an 8-4, kind of the status quo.
Yeah, because if Tennessee goes 8-4, it's probably going to have a nice finish to recruiting this year as well. And that's going to be factored in, how good of a recruiter you are. So I would think that Jeremy Pruitt would absolutely make a jump. You're going to go to a nice bowl game, I would say. You might get a bowl win. Who knows? Maybe you go 9-4. But if Tennessee's 8-4 at the end of this regular season, they sign a nice class, I would think surely Jeremy Pruitt's inside the top 30 next year.
Yeah, I think so. And, it, 8-4 can happen in so many different ways. And I'll throw this at you real quick. Preferably for me, I would rather Jeremy Pruitt, if this team is going to go 8-4, knock off one of the big four and then maybe lose to Kentucky or South Carolina. Like I would kind of take that trade off. If you could tell me, okay, you're guaranteed a win over Oklahoma, Florida or Georgia or Alabama, but you're also guaranteed to lose to either South Carolina or Kentucky, I would take that all day right now because it would give you a marquee thing.
I would think you want to, if you're making that trade, you want to keep it in the SEC. Like if you beat Oklahoma but then lose to Kentucky within the SEC,
you're right.
That means your season has gone in a bad direction because the Oklahoma win comes early, so you're 2-0. That means you're going to go 6-4 the rest of the way?
Yeah, that's a good point.
4-4 in SEC play?
That's a good point. And I was thinking of more prestige and not timeline, so I'm glad that you brought that up.
Well, yeah, plus conference record. You're going to go 4-4, so you're going to take a step back there. Would you trade a Kentucky win for Florida? Would you do that right now if I said you can beat Florida, but you're going to lose to Kentucky several weeks later? Would you do that deal right now?
I think so, just because of the hurdle that it seems to be that of Tennessee beating Florida. And I get it, because the same perception would also be around that part of the conversation that you just brought up. It would be beating Florida early and then questions about how you're finishing. And the fact that Tennessee finished so strong last year, even though they didn't really beat anybody that was super impressive, the way they finished was impressive. And that carried a lot of momentum. So maybe I should consider that more. If you're saying a Kentucky trade, a Kentucky win for a Georgia win, I think that would be hands down. People would take that because of the time of the year that it came in, with that game being in November. What do you think?
First of all, that would be an impressive turnaround by Tennessee, because if they've lost the other games, they're going to be underdogs in. If they've lost to Oklahoma, lost to Florida, lost to Bama, lost to Kentucky, and then somehow go to Athens, I'm going to have some questions about what's going on with Georgia season. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, no kidding. Especially because you would also have the whole conversation about them dropping the game in the middle of the season to South Carolina last year and kind of just... having a brain fart moment or whatever label you want to put on it for Georgia. So, yeah, you could definitely add some problems for Kirby Smart if Tennessee was able to pull off that win. But I should amend my original statement. The Oklahoma, it would mean a lot just, I think, for people to buy into, hey, they really are turning this around. It would be a nice blip on the national media radar where Tennessee could get some respect. But in the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't mean a ton. So maybe I would take that one off the table and just do the other three big SEC opponents with trading those for a Kentucky win.
Yeah, the Kentucky-Georgia games are back-to-back for Tennessee. So that would mean Tennessee coming off a loss at home to Kentucky with a 5-4 record would go to Athens the next week and beat the Georgia Bulldogs. That's a scenario that's unlikely, let's say, to play out. We will come back.
Josh, it's a weird year, COVID-19 year.
You're not wrong. It has been a weird year. The 2006 game was kind of weird, but it was really good for Tennessee with the Vols hanging half 100. And that second half, that fourth quarter, what a game it ended up being for Tennessee. We're going to talk about that and his time at Tennessee with Jonathan Wade when he joins us for our Call of All segment coming up next here on Sports 180. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. This is FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
A few storms popping in the South Valley as we get some midday sunshine. That leaves a WVLT weather alert in place through 6 p.m. as some stronger storms flare up from south to north in the Valley, Plateau, and in the Smokies. Some damaging wind potential in a few spots. 82 today, 84 Friday. From the WVLT Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ben Cathy.
They thrilled you, made you stand up and cheer, and gave you memories to last a lifetime. But where are they now? Sports 180 plays catch up with those that have worn the orange. Here's today's Call of Vol.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us on this Thursday afternoon. We are excited to be with you for the next 2.5 hours. We have a lot to cover. Don't forget, coming up on Saturday, the 2006 Tennessee-Georgia game. You can hear the Vol Network Classic as we've run those each and every Saturday. It's been a lot of fun, and that was a fun game for Tennessee fans. So scheduled to be joined by Jonathan Wade, who had an interception in that game, by the way. And Tennessee kind of started to take off from there. That was late in the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter was all Tennessee. You even had the block punt and touchdown by Antonio Wardlow. So 2006 Tennessee-Georgia, the Vols hanging up half 100, 51 points in that game against the Georgia Bulldogs back in 06.
Now they have gotten a little bit of, I guess, revenge for hanging half 100 on Georgia way back in the day in recent history. But hopefully one of the big things that we've been talking about is that narrative in the gap between Tennessee and Georgia shrinks this year under Jeremy Pruitt. So can't wait to catch up with Jonathan Wade. Part of several really big games for Tennessee. You talked about the 2004 Florida game earlier, and there was just a big-time athlete at Tennessee, and looking forward to hearing from him.
Yeah, so let's welcome him to the show now, joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Former Tennessee cornerback, played some wide receiver at Tennessee as well, Jonathan Wade. Jonathan, how are you? We appreciate the time today.
Hello?
Hey, Jonathan, good to have you on. I'm Josh Ward. Heather Harrington is here as well. We were talking about that 2006 Georgia game. We're going to run the Vol Network Classic of it coming up on Saturday. You guys had a wild fourth quarter. You had a big interception late in the third quarter that kind of set up that run that was coming from Tennessee. What do you remember of that game where you end up, your team ends up putting 51 points on the Bulldogs?
I remember the halftime speech. Let's start there. Well, let's go back to the night before where I had Popeyes. My brother brought me Popeyes. That was me, Jason Swain, Robert Meacham, I think one other guy, all ate Popeyes, which probably was kind of like a no-no, but we did it anyway. The halftime speech, we were down, I think, 24-3. And we'd already lost to Florida by like 2 points. The halftime speech, I think, was done by our strength and conditioning coach at the time, Rod. He told us to just go get on the bus. It's actually what he told me. He said, go get on the bus. And it kind of just, he left it there. And that fired us up, and we came back out at the halftime knowing that if we lose this, it's over. We had just went through a bad season the year before, you know, and we didn't, there's no way we wanted that to happen again. We had to change something. So I probably remember way too much about that game, to be honest.
I was going to ask you, what did it feel like being in Sanford Stadium at the end of that game, looking up at the scoreboard after that halftime speech? I mean, I could imagine the celebration in the visitors' locker room was nothing short of epic.
Truth moment. I had no idea what the score was when the game was over. I knew we won. It happened. We went from 3 to like 55. So, I mean, it went so fast. There was so much going on. Like, something major happened every series coming out of halftime. Even to the point to where they returned a kick for a touchdown where I missed the tackle. And that's how they got end up with 30, or when they, that was their next touchdown that they scored. It just was back and forth, and we didn't have time for any errors. So, like, everything matters at that point. That's when it's time where you have to do exactly what your coach will tell you to do. A lot of people miss that, but the only way you have a chance to come back in a game like that is to actually be fundamentally sound.
We're talking to former Tennessee and NFL cornerback Jonathan Wade here on Sports 180. And Jonathan, as you mentioned, 2005 was a really disappointing season. You guys end up with a losing record. You bounce back in 06. You had that big win against Cal to start out the year. What was it that changed? What was it within the program and the team that allowed you guys to respond the way you did in 2006?
2005. When you watch about 10 to 12 guys that you as an athlete have seen, have been around, and you see them not get drafted the way that you thought they were. And for me, I was redshirted. So that was my class. Those were my classmates. I saw them not reach the promise in some cases that they were hoping for that we had been talking about for four and a half years. And at that moment, you have to decide you're either going to do this or not. And it was a group of us, Marvin Mitchell, Turk McBride, Inky Johnson, Robert Meacham, Jason Swain, Brett Smith, Justin Harrell. I can name about Antoine. I can name about Jonathan Heffney. I can name about five other guys that stayed. We never went home after that season. When that season ended and we did not go to a bowl game, we stayed up there and we vowed to not leave each other. And that was where it started.
Well, and you're kind of alluding there to having good culture and being very motivated. That's something that Tennessee has been trying to rebuild for the better part of a decade. What do you think feeds into having good culture the most, and how can Jeremy Pruitt now do that with Tennessee?
Well, the players make the plays. Coach's job is to prepare us and put us in position to win. You know, be successful. So the players still have to go out there and want to perform at a high level every snap, every day. Until that happens, nothing will change. Until it's self-policed in the locker room, nothing will change. There's nothing a coach is going to do. It has to be internal.
Yeah, how does that happen? Where does that come from to where you get that internal policing and you have the right kind of leadership in place to hold others accountable?
Well, if you look at business, a lot of people play the role before they ever get hired. So I'm sure as a head coach of a university such as Tennessee, Knoxville, in order to get that job as a coach, you have to be able to manage these kids that you are trying to turn from 18 to 22. You know, we're wild. We come from nothing in some cases. You know, we're there because we have a scholarship, not because of grades or whatever the case is. So you got to be able to manage all that. But again, on the field, if it's not a decision that's made up in the locker room that we're going to go practice hard, that we're not going to take today off, that we're going to touch the line every time they ask us to touch the line. If we're going to get to the morning run, if you don't make that decision, it doesn't matter. Coach Pruitt can have the best speeches. He can be the best motivator in the world, but if it's not inside of the athletes, it's not going to happen. And I don't know because I'm not there. Funny, I'm actually on the way to Knoxville right now. I'm in Memphis, driving to Knoxville as we speak. But it's got to be the guys inside the locker room. In the locker room, the players make it happen, period.
Now, you were talking about earlier your career being up and down at Tennessee, finishing on a high note. What were some of the takeaways of your time at Tennessee that you still reflect back on now that you're an adult and raising your own children?
Whoa. Okay. Yeah, you should have texted me that one. No, I'm just joking. College is an internship. I don't think enough people realize that. You go to college to get the career you want. And if you keep that mindset, I did not have that mindset. But if you go into college understanding that you are on an internship, don't expect bleep. I did it for you guys. Don't expect anything. You're on an internship. Go do what you're told to do. Be where you're supposed to be. Don't get in trouble. The rest will take care of itself. You can't mess up when you're on an internship. They don't need you. They bring in another class of recruits every year, just like they draft more players every season. You're replaceable. That's the biggest takeaway I got.
We're talking to former Tennessee defensive back Jonathan Wade, spent several years in the NFL as well. And Jonathan, I want to go back a couple years earlier. We talked about the Tennessee-Georgia game 06. What do you remember about the 04 Florida game? Here's one thing I remember. Media day that week, you're coming down to talk to the media. You're coming down the stairs. You start doing a gator chomp, and Bud Ford tells you to cut it out. But at the end of that game, there's a play with you and Dallas Baker, kind of works out in your favor, and then James Wilhoit hits the kick. What do you remember about all of that?
Everything. yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for that. You want another truth moment? My dad called me when he heard about that and told me that was a huge mistake. I should not have done that. That they go come to me the entire game. But you know, I'm just excited. It was my first start as a corner. Me coming, you know, only as a corner instead of going both ways. And Dallas, he's big. He was 6'3", 6'4", and I'm not 6'3" or 6'4". And you know, as the games are playing on, if you go back to the game against Cal, I hit DeSean Jackson in the face on the second play of the game. Playing DB, you got to work mind games. You have to. You're at a disadvantage. The offense, the receiver, the quarterback, the coaching staff upstairs in the skybox, everybody knows what's going on except you. So you got to be able to have some type of thing to where you can, you know, attack. So talking to him, frustrating him, we were into it the entire game. And I took a chance. I kid you not, to shove him, see if he would react, and he did. We got lucky. That goes left. I probably never play again.
I'm just sad that the Gator Chomp was before the Twitter era began, because I would love that gif right now, Jonathan.
Who you telling? I would have been great for social media when I was in school, but God knew what He was doing by not allowing it to be present when I was there.
That's terrific. Hey, Jonathan Wade's with us. I want to ask you about somebody that you mentioned a moment ago as well, Inky Johnson. What has Inky meant to you as a former teammate at the University of Tennessee, a friend, just all of that? What have you learned from Inky as well?
What haven't I learned from Inky? So you're not supposed to say, that's not correct. I'm sorry. What haven't I learned from Inky? Pause. I remember going to the hospital the night after the game. I went to the hospital. I believe it was the night or the morning after the game. He never, ever, ever allowed anyone to see him down. He was never down. He was already on to the next week for us. And in that scene, because I remember talking to Robert Ayers about that. Me and Robert Ayers were suite mates at the time. And he was telling me, just in a guy-to-guy close moment, that couldn't have been me. You know, I don't know how I would have, I don't know how I responded to that. But he never wavered. He never wavered. And that showed me that when God has something for you, you got to, like, allow him to do whatever that is. Because you may think your arm's gone, but that arm has now put him on a platform to where he can speak to millions of people, possibly in a way that would have never happened if he played. There's your answer.
Yeah, he is truly incredible, and I know that we all love keeping up with him. Catch people up to date with what you're up to now, Jonathan, and what you and your family are doing, especially during the quarantine, because it's such a weird year for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, I have like some kids that I kind of mentor in a way. I'm trying to find a short way to say this. I want to give them what I didn't have. As a kid growing up, I wasn't the biggest kid. I wanted to see a professional athlete as a kid. Like, when I was a kid, I wanted to have a professional athlete tell me I was going to be okay. So I watch film with them. I help them train. They can call me on the phone. I'll take them to all-star games so that I can talk to them in a car. Whatever it is that they need, I'll do it. I mean, they don't know that, but I just know what it's like to, you know, long for that. To know that it's – I didn't have anybody tell me that I was going to be okay. I didn't believe it until the defensive back coach, which is currently at Tennessee right now, ended up in my summer school class the year before my senior year. Again, by God's doing, and we just talked, and like we met and talked, and it was everything I needed that summer to like get going. But I didn't have that before. I didn't have someone who was there, someone who reached the dream that I was trying to reach, tell me what I needed to do. Some of us kids, we'll listen. We're that desperate, and it's just people won't reach out. You know, they just won't go back and talk. A lot of people will, so I'm not saying that they won't, but, you know, some kids will listen. If you can reach one or two, one maybe, you never know what that kid could become. Inky Johnson.
Yeah, that's awesome. What does it mean to you, Jonathan, to be able to do that now?
Everything. Don't get a dollar for it. And I'm exhausted every time I go do it.
Well, Jonathan, good for you. It's great to have you on the show. Yeah, we appreciate the time looking back at your time at Tennessee. Congrats on all that you've done since you left UT as a player. Safe travels to Knoxville. Glad you're making it back to Knoxville, and hopefully we can get you on the show again sometime soon. We always enjoy talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you guys again, and have a safe quarantined sort of year, life. I'm not sure how it's going to go, but, you know, we'll get it figured out as a country.
Wash your hands.
That's right.
All right. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Wade. And I remember he was great to cover in terms of he talked to the media. Some of the stuff he said here, he said back then. He talked about Inky back then about the impression that he was making. That stuff he said at the time. So just really good stuff. And his memory of those games. He said
spot
he remembered
on.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's like you and Jimmy Himes. Y'all still impress me with knowing everything that happens every single second of a game. And he reminded me of you two immediately when he was like, oh, I remember this and this. I mean, that's just fantastic. And the fact that it was
that Gator
just
chomp before the 04 Florida game. Terrific.
Oh, don't you wish that he really was in the Twitter era or the social media era? Because we've had some of those athletes, but they've been sort of stifled. I would compare him to like an Alvin Kamara. I bet both of those guys would vibe very well on social media together.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we can ask Philip Fulmer sometime. Maybe at some point Philip recognized that personality that Jay Wade had as well. And maybe it's him. Maybe it's Randy Sanders. Maybe it's Johnny Long. And they said, this guy, put him over on defense. He's going to go smack Dallas Baker someday, and it'll help Tennessee beat Florida. We'll come back. We'll hit the face-off coming up next. Enjoyed that Call of All segment with former Tennessee DB Jonathan Wade. This is Sports 180 on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The runaway number one. 1 in East Tennessee for sports. We are 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us today. Really enjoyed that chat with Jonathan Wade. Fun talking about Tennessee football in the mid-2000s and getting some of his perspective and what he's doing now as well. Check that out on the app and on the website after it gets posted up there. Sam Foreman producing for us. Heather Harrington's here. I'm Josh Ward. Let's get right to it with today's face-off.
You want some? Come get some!
Head-to-head, toe-to-toe, let's go one-on-one with today's face-off.
But to be the man, you gotta beat the man.
Presented by Fort Sanders Health and Fitness Center.
Are you ready?
Let's get this mother crock!
Alrighty, Sam, what do you have for us?
Alright, first up today is 8 wins too high, too low, or just right for the Vols this year in football.
I'm going to say it's just about right. I think there's a good chance Tennessee pulls off a win in one of those big four games. I think it's also realistic that Tennessee slips up somewhere else. You might think, oh, that's not going to happen, but BYU and Georgia State happen. Anything can happen. So I think 8-4 is about right.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody could go higher or lower right now. I think 8-4 is exactly what needs to happen. And it can happen a multitude of different ways. But 8-4 means you're steadily climbing, means you're making a bowl game. We'll see how that shakes out. But I think that's the perfect prediction right now for Tennessee.
All right, next up, would you be in favor of a World Cup-style group stage for this year's NBA playoffs?
Yes, because it would get an acclimation period going where you are playing competitive games that mean something, but kind of getting you back in the mix for the long haul of the playoffs. It would also include teams like the Blazers and the Pelicans. So give me this World Cup style kind of play-in into the playoffs. I'm all here for it.
You can tell me at this point that each team's going to select one player and they're going to settle the first round of the playoffs with beer pong or water pong if you want to keep it cleaner. And I'd say, you know what, let's do it at this point with no sports. So you give me a group stage like the World Cup with a bunch of teams playing a bunch of basketball with playoff spots on the line. I'm down. I really like the setup. Plus, we can see if it's something you want to do in the future.
All right, next up, if you had to call it right now, where will Jadeveon Clowney play in 2020?
Pass. I will say Nashville. I'll say it gets worked out with the Tennessee Titans. I'm going to say there's a reason he hasn't chosen Cleveland, and that's because he doesn't want to be there. Maybe he ends up saying, you know what, I'll take the money, but I'm going to say Nashville, the Titans.
I'm going to go with the Browns just because I think at the end of the day, money is going to talk. I get what you're saying about Nashville, and that might be the safest bet right now, but the fact that he's probably going to get more money from the Browns than anybody else, I think that could be the determining factor. So give me the Browns.
So not sure why you stopped after pass, Josh. I think that was the correct answer. Today is National Hamburger Day. What is your ideal burger?
This is easy. It's a black and blue burger. I want some black Angus beef. I want some blue cheese on top of it. Throw a little mayo on there. Maybe some lettuce and tomato. But yeah, if you give me a hamburger and some blue cheese crumbles, I am one happy camper.
I'm going to go with the old bacon cheeseburger. So you've got the cheddar cheese, you've got bacon on top, and then you've got your beef patty. So, by the way, it's like three different kinds of National Burger Days, but National Hamburger is the easiest way to say it. But I'm going to go with your bacon cheeseburger is the ideal, in general, setup for a burger.
Do you also sandwich that with two pieces of lettuce because you're counting your carbs?
You got lettuce, tomato, and onions. I mean, you got the classics on top, no doubt about it.
I'm just disappointed in both of you for no Jimmy Buffett reference. Come on, a cheeseburger in paradise? Come on. That was a simple answer. On Jeremy Pruitt's birthday, what is his most important win so far at Tennessee?
This is not his best win, and I think this is arguable. I think what's his best win, I think that's arguable. I'm going to say it's the Mississippi State game, and I'm going to say that because of the flip side. If Tennessee loses that game, I don't know if they continue turning things around as they ended up doing. That was at a critical point. So closing out in the fourth quarter against Mississippi State.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the fact that Tennessee ran the ball at will versus Mississippi State's defense, I think that just set a tone for what they were going to do. That game was sandwiched in between the Georgia and Alabama game, and the Vols were 1-4 going into it. So the fact that they weren't overlooking Mississippi State, they took care of business, and they ran the ball like they did, I think that was a tone setter for Jeremy Pruitt and his era at Tennessee.
Well, way to copy me there, Heather.
I know. I'm so mad you got to go first on that one. Gosh.
They were both equally good answers. Well, we'll go with that. It was another close one today. I don't love the NBA as much as Josh does, but the fact that I am as desperate for basketball to be back as Josh gives him the win today and the lead for the week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be like a kid in a candy store if they'd go with group stage, just here's a bunch of basketball. And the way it would set up is you'd have four groups, five teams. The top two teams in terms of records would come out of the group stage play.
Yeah.
Each team would play the other four teams two times each. So you'd have eight games for each team in there. Take the two best records, you move on to the quarterfinals, and at that point you start playing best of seven series.
Yeah, I actually like it, and I know that Zach Lowe in his piece on ESPN, he broke it down and he said it might seem gimmicky to some people. This is a weird year, so why not just for 1 year try something different, especially to make it work and to get more teams involved? I want to see Dame play. You know, let's get some more Dame time because he was on a roll when the season ended. You know, let's get Zion playing LeBron James again. I mean, I'm definitely here for that.
Yeah, I think when people say it's gimmicky, they just say that because they don't have any points to argue against. So, it's gimmicky. Yeah, sports are gimmicky. We'll come back. 2 hours of Sports 180 to go here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.